The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Users lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Podcast Beyond, episode 348. I am one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside the pride of Long Island, Colin Moriarty.
Daddy's come home, Greg.
Daddy has come home. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us for the first time since episode 107, 2009.
That's a long time.
Founding father of Podcast Beyond, Jeremy Dunham.
Hey, sons.
Hey, how are you, Dad? It's good to see you.
I'm very glad to be back.
We're thrilled to have you. Put the mic up there.
I'm going to put it right here.
Back time you were here, we had headsets. You twist this thing nowadays, you can move it up, you can move it down, do whatever you want.
Oh, you kids and your technology.
I tell you what, we never had this back in 2009. Back in 2007, us and Clements in here, we didn't know what we were doing.
Back in 2009, we used to have a room that got so hot so quickly, we used to have that fan off into the side.
Yep.
And whenever you turned it on, it sounded like we were in an airport. I do not miss that fan.
No, not at all. I miss Soleus. Remember when they put Soleus the robot in there? The crinkle arms? Rest in peace, Soleus. He was the best, Colin, because he was an air conditioning unit, you remember?
Yeah, he looked like one of Uncle Owen's broke-ass droids that he bought from the Jawas.
But then Scott Bromley hollowed him out for a shoot and then hid it from Pablo forever. And then when we moved, Pablo's like, what is this? This plastic shell doesn't even do anything. Threw it away. That was the end of Soleus. Jeremy.
Greg.
You've been gone so long.
I have.
We've missed you.
Thank you. I've missed you guys, too. It's been both bittersweet and awesome to be gone.
Yeah. Where do you want to start? You left?
I left to go to Zipper Interactive.
Right. I remember those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I do, too.
Yeah.
It was all my fault, I guess. they were a great company, though. Mm-hmm. I'm sure the PlayStation fans remember them very well for the SOCOM series.
Yeah, and you wrote Unit 13.
I did. I wrote Unit 13. That was my first design gig.
Yeah.
For me, it was an awesome opportunity. I got to do military lingo, and I got to work with voice actors, and including Cree Summer, who did one of the voices for us. So for me, a lot of people are like, who's Cree Summer? She was on A Different World. Do you remember that?
No,
that
show? Shoot.
she was on that shoot, and I wrote a part specifically for her because I was a fan of Chris Summer.
Who was she on A Different World, though?
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
She was the friend. She was the best friend. She was like the peppy.
Was she
friend.
The one who was like all
super
into the,
curly hair?
Was she the one who was like always one of the expensive things?
No, that you're silly. That was Jasmine Guy.
Sorry, I'm
shows
sorry.
Shows you how old I am.
I remembered A Different World, but I was not up yet to be able to recognize
like
actresses.
She was like the peppy friend with the smoky voice.
Oh,
and so I always
okay.
thought her voice was cool. And me at the time, I think I was like 9 or 10. Smoky voices on chicks really got me.
Yeah,
of course. I always remembered that. And then when I went back to make that game, I was like, you know who has a great voice? It's her. Funny, interesting, especially how much you guys have worked with her. I wasn't sure we were going to get her at first. And so the other person that we were going to approach to the voice was Aisha Tyler.
Oh, nice.
but she was busy too, so and luckily it all worked out. But
yeah.
Shows you where I was who I was digging when I was a kid.
Yeah. I like that. I like where your head was at for that.
Yeah.
Different World was a good show. Underrated. I liked it. Good spin-off of the Cosby Show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And then Denise left after one season.
Yep,
but they kept going. They were like, we're not giving up
on
the Hillman clan.
Marissa Tomei was on that show, too.
That's right, she was.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh darn it. That's a good one. All right, so you go to Zipper.
I go to Zipper.
Everything happens.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
That was we were working on a bunch of games, and then one day our VP just goes, "Hey, everybody, you know this game we're working on? Let's stop working on that." And we're like, "Why?"
Yeah.
Like, "Oh, we'll let you know soon." And that was about 2 weeks. For 2 weeks, everyone's like, "Why aren't we working on this game?" The writing was on the wall. We pretty much knew what was going to happen. And then, unfortunately, we were closed, which is too bad, too, because we were working on really cool projects, including we were going to work on a PS4 game. So there you go. There's some news.
Yeah.
We were going to work on a PS4 game, but never left the concept stage. It was always still – we're still figuring it out, but – now it's never to be.
Right. Yeah, that's too bad. I like Zipper a lot. I think that, in my opinion, we've talked about this in the past, but I feel like Zipper was kind of victimized by the PSN outage with the SOCOM game that came out, and then they never really got a chance to like redeem themselves. That was kind of an act of God, an act of digital God. You know, like your SOCOM is in contingent on being online. It comes out, like, I think that week, Tuesday or whatever, then Thursday the network goes down or something heinous like that. It's like, you can't play it.
I agree with that completely. That's exactly what happened. SOCOM came out on a Tuesday, and then the internet outage happened a few hours after that. And then once that was gone, it was 5 weeks, I think it was, before as PSN was down. And most of our players were online from that point forward. By the time that came out again, or the PSN came back, there were other games, and people had moved on, and
much time passed.
Yeah.
PSN outage lasted forever.
It really did. Well, you know how it works. In video games, when they're released, people play them for a couple of weeks. They're the hot game of the time, or even not. Sometimes they're not the hot game. They're one of the games that happen to come out that week, and then other games come out in your memory. And that happens all the time. So, especially now when there's so many options to pick on any platform, anytime you want, the competition's bigger and tougher. So, yeah, I mean, it can kill you fast. Just ask Zipper.
Yeah, and I was bummed by that because I actually really liked Unit 13 too. It's still one of the games that understood Vita the best, and I think it's still
short burst of action.
Yeah, because it's not only like it has the flair of a console game, but you can play in short bursts, and it makes sense in short bursts because you can just shut your Vita off whenever you want in the middle of a mission if you want, but still those 5-10 minute missions, 15 minute missions, get through the map on the bus or whatever. I thought that game made a lot of sense. So.
What I really liked working about on that game specifically is that we built it from concept to finished product in 9 months. That's all we had, and we did it without an SDK for most of the development process.
That's crazy.
A lot of guesswork because at the time the Vita was coming in hot, so there was still a lot of stuff that we didn't know about the system yet. So it was all approximations, and they didn't have the multiplayer stuff ready to go. So a lot of the multiplayer stuff that you saw at the end was just a lot of really late nights with the team working those last couple of months. And we were really proud. That's part of the great tragedy of Zipper for us, is we as a team had really come together, and we're really happy and excited about how well Unit 13 turned out on the amount of time that we had. And we thought that it was a forecast of, okay, we're back. We're going to go back to the glory days of SOCOM 2, SOCOM 1, and really show people that we can make great games. And we just didn't work out for us.
It's unfortunate.
It still upsets me. But
yeah, there were a few casualties that year. Big went down too, and Liverpool, which I think was probably the biggest surprise of them all. So what? Where'd you go next after that? You went to another company.
To Euphoria Games. Euphoria Games is a startup from ex Call of Duty and ex Sony Online folks. And those Sony Online guys were up there in Seattle too. They worked on stuff like
Agency
DC Universe.
Was that what they were working on before? Yeah.
And that was on a free to play game. You guys all came out to the event that we had for it a few years ago. It's called Offensive Combat.
Right. Banana suits.
Yeah. Guys, banana suits.
The old banana suit game.
Right. And it was free to play. And that game, I think, had a lot of really good ideas. But it's free to play is a very hard market to get into, and I think in retrospect, now that I've had some time, that company is closed down too. I guess you can call me the closer because I'm going to come in and I'm going to end your company.
Oh no! Why do we invite him back through the door?
Thank you, Psyonix. It's been a pleasure working with them, and I'll see you shortly. I think in retrospect, the competition is just too rough, and it's really hard to get into the free-to-play market with a shooter when there's so many other options out there.
Sure.
And compete with a small team and kick butt and make money. Free-to-play is a very hard market to make money in, especially as free-to-play goes on and more folks expect free. It's harder to find things that you can charge for legitimately, and there's also that balance of pay-to-win versus just paying the bills. So it's that was, I think, that game taught me a lot of what works and what doesn't work in the free-to-play market.
Okay. And so now you're down in San Diego.
I am.
Psionics. Now, this is some kind of mental implant business.
That's right. It's the sequel to PsyOps. No, it's... my old games. No, Psionics is a great company. I haven't felt this way about a company since I worked with you guys back in the Dark Ages. This company knows what they're doing. These guys are very smart. They make the right decisions. Everyone is involved in the creation of a game. It's not like... three or four people in a corner saying, this is what we're going to do. Everyone deal with it. We talk as a company about the things we want to do. It's fantastic. And you guys might know them from Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket Powered Battle Cars, which came out on...
I like how you almost got through without a laugh.
It's a long title. On the PS3, and that came out in 2008. And they've also done Nosgoth right now, which we had at E3. And that's from Square Enix's publishing. That's a vampire versus human shooter. Well, not really a shooter. It's kind of like a shooter, but it's more like a melee versus range. So there's some shooting elements.
Gotcha.
But, and that's what we're working on now. And there's another game that we have in closed alpha right now called Rocket League, and it's the sequel to Supersonic Acrobatic Rocket Powered Battle Cars.
You lost a lot of words in this sequel.
Because it's easier to remember. That's why. That's
Yeah,
right.
No.
It's a lot easier. Can you repeat the game, the first game that I just gave you?
No.
Right.
Supersonic acrobatic rocket-powered racers?
No.
I had a lot of words in there were in the real title.
But Rocket League is a lot easier to remember.
Yeah.
But it's essentially a follow-up to that. It's 6 years later, and we've instilled a lot of the changes that the community wanted. We've added a whole bunch of features to the game. It's in closed alpha now. And one of the reasons I'm here to talk to you guys is that we at the team, the game started at PlayStation 3, and we really wanted to gauge everyone's interest, especially on Beyond, which has such a huge audience, if you guys would want to see that sequel, Rocket League, on PS4.
Oh.
And so if you do, we want everyone to let us know, either in the comments section or however you
What's
guys
your Twitter?
Want
to have
us
them
know.
Tweet it. Have them tweet it, yeah. And they say hashtag Beyond.
Hashtag Beyond. There's at Psionics Studios.
There you go.
Is our Twitter. There's also, we're on Facebook also under Psionics. And there's also a Rocket League Facebook page as well.
Okay.
If you want to see it on PlayStation 4, let us know. And if we get enough people, and there's no magic number, we'll look at it and we'll say, oh, wow, that's a lot of people.
Sure. What's the elevator pitch for Rocket League?
It
if
is
has no idea what
so
it, if they
never
miss Supersonic Acrobatic Aquaduga Racers.
If you've never played Rocket League before or Battle Cars before, it's basically soccer is what we call it internally. It's soccer meets cars. It's a sports game. It's not a racing game. It's basically because there are a lot of huge soccer fans in the office right now, and we're all going crazy for the World Cup. I was super excited to watch the Mexico-Brazil game last week. And we've seen I don't know how many games in bars in the local scene now.
Yeah. You're getting a lot of work done there.
Oh, yeah.
Real
totally.
Smart people at Psionics.
I told you they're smart. we go to really good food places and watch the World Cup. I think that's pretty smart.
Sure.
But it's basically soccer with cars that have rocket-powered boosting abilities. And you can do all sorts of cool stunts. And it's... we have 2-on-2, 3-on-3, 4-on-4, and the idea is to just get in there and play. It's very similar to a soccer game that you'd play, only we go a little extra further and give you rocket-powered cars instead of people. And that's really what it is.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I will admit that it's not a game for everyone, right? The entire world isn't saying, you know what we really need is cars with rockets attached to them playing soccer. But those who do like the game, and we have a lot of them. There's over 1.5 million downloads of the last game on PS3, which is a lot.
Yeah, especially for a PSN game.
They love it. And we still have people playing the game today. We patched the original Battle Cars 2 weeks ago because people are still playing it. Six years after it came out, because GameSpy shut down, And we ran on their service, and we know that we have a dedicated audience. We weren't going to let them not play the game anymore, so we went in there and we built our own network, and now they can play the game without GameSpy. And that's the sort of dedication that our fans have. And so we want to take that to the current generation and see what they think if we move to PS4. So let us know if you want it to come to PS4.
Tweet, comment.
Facebook comment, all those things.
Yeah.
Or like, just share, say it. Subscribe. No one's going to hear it, but you can just
yell
say it.
Yell it in your car right now.
Right. And I'll also let you know, if anyone wants to play it, if you send us a tweet at Psyonix Studios, or you go to the Rocket League Facebook page, which is Rocket League, and you just let you mention on that page, hey, Beyond, we'll get you into the closed alpha right now. Anybody who wants to come in, anybody.
That's a good deal.
There you go.
It's a great deal.
So you can check it out and let us know what you think. And hopefully you guys will like it enough to want us to bring it to PS4. And if you do, I guarantee you we will take the resources necessary and we will put it on the PlayStation 4.
Awesome.
Awesome.
There you go.
A lot of bold claims from Jeremy Dunham.
There you go.
A bold man.
And now I'm out of here.
Puts the table, smash the computer. I like, in the middle of your rundown of where you've gone since IGN, and I realized we never really said what you did at IGN.
Yeah.
Like, you founded Beyond, which is great. That's why everybody knows you or whatever. But you worked here 7 years. Ten. If you count the Dreamcast when you were freelancing, right?
Yeah. So 99 is when I started as a freelancer on the Dreamcast channel, and then I did some PC work. And then Douglas C. Perry, who was the editor-in-chief way back in the day, hired me to work on the PlayStation team in 2002. The end of 2001, but I started it in 2002. And I replaced a very popular editor at the time, whose name was Dave Zadurko. So that was really intimidating at the time to step into such popular shoes.
Sure.
And I worked with Doug and Dave Smith, who everyone called the Reverend, because he was actually... He was a reverend. He had his own.
It was very literal. Coffee cake.
It was quite literal. Over the years, I eventually ended up running the whole editorial team. I did what Steve Butz does now,
right?
Which was oversee the entire editorial team, and I hired you.
You did.
And I hired Ryan Clements and Mark Ryan Salee. I was kind of a collaboration with Chris Carl.
Yeah.
And
you co-fathered.
I co-fathered him. Yeah. It was a sordid night with Chris Carl. there are a lot of folks here that are either still here or have worked here and have since moved on. It makes me feel like Ryan Geddes.
Yeah.
It makes me feel. Makes me feel like it's funny you said daddy's home. It makes me feel like it's not necessarily a fatherhood, but it does feel like a teacher or a mentorship.
Sure.
Even though I didn't teach you guys shit. I almost said it. I didn't teach you anything. I'm really proud of you guys and how far you've come. And I remember when both of you started and you learning the ropes and... you guys have just far exceeded anything I ever did and anything that we did as a team before you joined. So I'm very impressed with you guys. And
thank you.
I'm very proud
of
you guys.
We owe you a great deal.
Yeah, a lot.
You can make the checks payable.
To Psyonix.
To Psyonix, my
No, I mean, I hear you. That's the thing we always talk about, right, is that there's a legacy here. And I think Colin and I sometimes get lost in the day-to-day weeds of it. But, like, looking back, like, when I was trying to figure out what episode was your last episode, I was on the train today looking at the wikis, and it's like, it goes all the way back to 2007. You're like, oh, my God. And it's
so
like, all these weeks. I know, right? Like, how old I feel now whenever we talk about something like this and coming up on 315, 400 down the road again. It's like, wow.
It started before Clements had even started.
Yep.
We brought him on, like, the third or fourth episode,
that's
I think it was.
Yeah, you're the first voice that was ever heard on Podcast Beyond.
Oh,
you're
wow.
The
first I apologize.
Host.
I apologize. And you, and Podcast Beyond was named by a fan.
Right.
Remember that we were just like, what do you want to call it? And a fan named it. Yeah. So I remember those days.
In classic IGN style, we never really wrote down his name. I think in episode one, we're like, hey, some fan did it. Like,
I think we remembered his name at the time. I hope it was right.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
well, there's some guy out there like, I named it.
That was me. That was mine.
That was
He's
me.
Coming for those royalties eventually. Also, Podcast Beyond, fun fact, all three of us have had cancer.
That's
so
right.
So when are we suing this place?
<I know>. That was the thing that came to my mind. I wonder if our podcast room was above some kind of uranium mine.
Sure.
I don't know what it was, but it was strange. In like a year and a half period, we all got something. So
it's very weird.
Yeah, so I was serious earlier when I said get those checks ready.
Yeah, yeah.
We got to do something. I'm dead serious.
That's right.
Another housekeeping item.
Yes.
Before we get into the whole show, of course, this is Podcast Beyond, the internet's number one PlayStation podcast, IGN's PlayStation podcast. We post it as an MP3 every Tuesday, a video every Wednesday. Last week, Colin, we offhandedly mentioned and bleeped a few curse words.
Right.
And said we're trying
it's
not
very
to curse anymore
because I curse like a sailor.
Right.
So I love
exactly.
To work.
And no, so do I. Everybody knows that from listening to the show. This is similar to back in the day when we tried to move the podcast clean, and then eventually we're like, whatever, go back to being explicit. We don't care. Right. And so now it's one of those everything is that's old is new again at IGN.
Right.
But people in the comments and on Twitter were like, there's been not like a big split, but most people are like, oh, well, I like the cursing. Other people are like, oh, I love that I can listen to it with my kids now in the car, blah, blah. But the main question has been why, as if Colin and I stepped out and decided this was the fact. I'm sorry if we make it look too fun here. We have bosses, and our bosses said there's a profanity policy. Stop cursing so much on podcasts.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. You're welcome to tweet at us all the time and say, go back to cursing. You suck. And then we just mute you or Colin blocks you, and we never worry about it again. But a heads up that we're the shorter chefs in here. We're making the omelet. It's the way we're told to make the omelet.
Yeah,
so
there's a recipe.
It really is what's old is new again, because I remember having this exact same conversation with Hillary Goldstein in 2007 when he was doing Three Red Lights, and he's like, why can't I curse, dude? Like, well, because you can't do it. We have an explicit lyrics warning they had to put on the iTunes. So that's why I at that time was saying don't curse on the podcast.
Right.
Now it's probably just kids are listening.
No, it's not even that. Now what the deal is that the podcast permeates in so many different mutations. You know, if we were still just on iTunes, nobody would care because nobody cares about podcasts. You know what I mean? They don't make money, so whatever. But the fact that we make the videos and put them up, then we get into this weird thing of like, the videos that get broken out as topics on Day by Day, they get censored by the video team. The Giant Beyond I put up, that's the only podcast shared on the PlayStation app, is uncensored.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they're not thrilled about that.
Yeah,
so.
No, that's a good point. If you want to hear us curse and say heinous things, you can listen to us on YouTube.
I was
going to
say, there are plenty of other avenues to hear Colin and I curse and talk about horrible, horrible things.
Not
on
10
the
seconds
internet.
Pass without me cursing on that show.
So, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be
in.
The Roper Report. Time
for some news.
Yay!
That's an honor of you, Jeff.
Meow, meow,
meow.
Literally.
He worked in the office for a while.
I know. I'm sad I missed. I saw him when I was visiting a couple months ago, but just for a brief second.
I tried to get him on to come on Beyond, but he wasn't allowed.
He was. Oh, was that what it was?
Yeah, he
I
told
thought
me,
was
like,
too
he's
busy.
Like, he had to clear it with people and like, you know, because he's just in another world. Whatever it is.
Would you say he was in a different world?
Yeah, he was full circle.
Full
very nice.
There are eight items on the list.
A baker's dozen.
I'm going to start with some distressing news. About our friend PlayStation Vita. Number one, according to the friend of the show, Shuhei Yoshida, president of Sony's first-party studios,
at
USP, you should expect fewer first-party games on Vita moving forward.
Oh.
Speaking with the website Polygon, Yoshida was asked if the new talking point strategy surrounding Vita, that it's a complementary device for PS4 and has lots of indie games and will support PlayStation Now, means that we should expect fewer AAAs from Sony studios moving forward. He said, quote, I would say yes, that's correct, end quote, which is unfortunate, but obvious. Freedom Wars is coming out soon. I think this week in Japan. One of the most pre-ordered games in Japan right now. And then it comes out later this year. But yeah, it seems like that's kind of the way it's going.
Yeah.
When we talked to him at E3, a lot less talk about the power of what the Vita can do by itself and more power of what the Vita can do with the PlayStation Network and the PlayStation 4.
Once they get Minecraft, I don't care.
Fair enough.
every one of these plane rides, I'm like, God, this would be great to have Minecraft.
We were talking about Unit 13 earlier. If you guys liked Unit 13, which you did, which I appreciate, a lot of the design team that was on that game is actually now working for Funbits. So for those of you who liked Unit 13 and like that design, most of the design team is at Funbits Interactive. That's all I'll say for now.
They make good
games,
too.
They make awesome games. Escape Plan.
Yep.
One of the best games on Vita.
Yep.
Do you mind if I ask you a question from John Roberts?
I don't mind if you ask me a question
from
John Roberts.
It's a PS4 Vita question.
Okay.
So it's kind of up this alley.
Okay.
He says, Dear Beyond Crew, one of my most anticipated games for the PlayStation 4/Vita coming out this year is Natural Doctrine.
Mm.
However, during E3, I saw absolutely nothing about it. No release date, gameplay footage, or anything of the sorts. I thought for sure it would be there due to the fact that it is already out in Japan, so I doubt TGS will have anything about it. Maybe Gamescom? My question is, have any of you had any experience with the game or know anything about how it will play? Being a huge fan of most JRPG/SRPGs, I cannot wait to see more about it. Also, PS4 is strongly lacking in JRPGs.
Yeah, it certainly is. All right, so here's the coincidence. You didn't know this. There's no way you could have noticed. I'm seeing Natural Doctrine tomorrow. NIS is coming into the office. I'm going to get direct feed on PS4. We're going to have a video preview and a written preview of the game. And it was at E3. It was behind closed doors. And I don't know if people at other sites wrote about it. I know we had an appointment with them. But I didn't go to that specific appointment. So I'm seeing Natural Doctrine tomorrow. The game did okay in Japan. It wasn't super well received.
That's no good.
It's supposed to be very hard, which is awesome. You know, like, what do you think about Tactics Ogre, Final Fantasy Tactics, the games we really like? These games are good, but they're not super difficult until later in the game. Apparently, this game is hard. You know what I mean? So I'm excited about that.
Well, that's part of the Nipponichi legacy, though, because, you know, for the longest time, they've been doing strategy RPGs, Makai Kingdom and Disgaea and all those other games. So that's exactly what I would expect from them. And don't count it not being at TGS, because the few times I went to TGS... every time I went there, they had plenty of already released games.
Yeah, that is a big part of their usual show.
Because for them, it's a lot like PAX is here, where they have a lot of folks showing up, cosplaying, and wanting to check out games that they might not otherwise have played, or they want to show off what they can do in existing games. So it could still be there for sure.
Cool.
Right on. Yeah, so that's a funny coincidence. I'm
going to
have that.
What we do. Podcast Dion.
I'm going to have that for you as soon as I can.
And cancer.
Right. Happy coincidences and cancer.
Also, just real quick, since we're talking about RPGs, you know, it's an SRPG. I also have I have Tales of Exilia 2. I have a build of it. We'll get that stuff up for everyone, all the RPG fans, soon. And I play Tales of Hearts on Vita at E3, and we'll have more on that as well soon, too. I'm a little behind right now.
You got a lot of stuff to do.
Catching up and, you know. There's X, Y, and Z on my play right now. I can't, you know.
You can't worry about Q.
No.
Yeah.
E3 does that to you, though.
No, it is. It does. It's horrifying.
There's several weeks of catch up afterwards. Yeah. And yeah, I remember those days. Good
luck. Trying to get back into your natural rhythm.
I'll be all right. You're welcome. My Natural Doctrine rhythm. Number two.
I thought we were going for one of our pregnant pauses.
No. I love that, though. Yeah, we sometimes just stop talking, and people think that the MP3 is broken, but it's not. We'll just go like 10 seconds without saying anything. And then we get a lot of complaints from people.
Number one PlayStation podcast on the internet.
That explains a lot. My wife does the same thing to me. And I'm hoping that's the explanation.
Did you fall asleep standing up?
I'm just thinking. Number two. We've known for a while that Destiny is getting exclusive content on PlayStation 3 and PlayStation 4, but now we know for how long. That the exclusive content is officially timed, and according to Amazon, the weapons, maps, and ships that PS3 and PS4 owners will have exclusive access to will end no sooner than fall 2015, so it's a year of exclusivity.
Mm.
Additionally, developer Bungie has released statistics on Destiny's invite-only alpha test, which ran this week, the week and the weekend of E3. Exclusively on PS4. 6.46 million player games took place during the alpha. Nearly 150 million primary weapon kills and 21.78 million secondary weapon kills occurred during those games. You can see all of the stats on a little story on IGN.
People don't love that game.
Yeah, they do. And like we said last week, very clever of them to
do it right after E3 and get excited.
Yeah, and because I really feel like we talked about this last week. I don't know how you feel about this, Jeremy, but I feel like, I don't want to say the response has been tepid to that game, but it just doesn't seem like the $500 million marketing and development budget is paying off in terms of the hype behind that game. Like, Grand Theft Auto had 6 months worth of everyone can't wait. And I feel like this was them saying, like, no, remember, we have this game coming out.
How many games really do live up to the hype these days, though? It's harder and harder for games to do that, because over the last 5 years in particular, I think, it's become a lot harder for games to reach this godlike status that they used to have with fans for a lot of reasons. I think that game fans are becoming more jaded and more apprehensive. And I think with the expansion of how many free-to-play games there are out there and indie games, that there's just a lot more competition and there's a lot more stuff that people can play. And I think that having that one big golden game to play in 3 months, 4 months, however long it's going to be, is less of a big event for them. And now you also, it's really hard to get people to change the games that they're already playing too. And so, you know, look at Call of Duty, right? It's not the biggest game in the world for no reason. It's because it's building on an audience that has already gotten used to the idea of playing a new one every year, like Madden used to be. Madden still is, but
not like it used to be.
There's
less and less games that are like an event where like the world stops turning for you to go play that.
Exactly.
There still are that, you know, your Halos or your when a Gears of War drops or something. But yeah, I know what you're saying. I mean, back when I started, right, on PS3, like there were those games that came out and like that was it.
Yep.
It was done. All you did was that.
And
like,
it was,
now it seems like if not, Bioshock Infinite didn't grab me in the first 5 minutes, I'm over it. And somebody, you know, you move on to whatever else is next, whatever digital games come out, whatever's happening over there.
And that's also actually, it's funny that you bring up Bioshock Infinite. I loved, I loved that game in the pre-DLC. Like, I thought that game was fantastic.
Yeah.
But then as I think that one of the things that you're seeing now with so much DLC added to games, it can also change the way that games are played and changes the experience. And you can actually, I think, start to remove some of the interesting aspects of the game the more you add on to it. Because now it feels more like a chore. I've already gotten all my achievements or trophies, and now, oh, wait, now I have to go back and I have to revisit this game I was done playing 3 months ago and play it again. And, you know, it's you might not like where the story goes. BioShock Infinite is a good example where I really liked the way they tied it up in the game proper. I wasn't a fan of how it ended at the end of Episode 2.
Yeah.
And that was a game that my wife and I treated as an event. Right, well, Episode 2 is coming. And so I think that that's...
Put the kids to bed.
That's exactly what we did.
Get to bed!
But, you know, I think that that's happening more and more often, too, is that now games aren't released in the same way that they used to be either, where you're having a complete, full experience.
Sure.
Or that the experience changes over time with the DLC. So I think that a lot of those factors influence how people perceive games and play games. And I know that that's happened to us all the time, Borderlands 2 being the exception, because that game, I love it.
See, Borderlands 2 was the same for me in the way that I loved Borderlands 2, bought the season pass when I was totally in love with the game, and never went back for any of the DLC, just because I didn't find myself wanting. You know what I mean? Like, I was so happy with the hours and hours and hours I put into it that when it came out, I was satisfied by that point. So yeah. They got my money. They did. They got the right job.
I played over 1,000 hours of Borderlands 2.
Good God.
So and the reason I know that is because of Raptor.
Yeah.
But I was watching. That game came out around the time that I got sick. So I had about 2 months of off time, of recovery time. And so that's all I did when I wasn't doing weird, really weird, morbid things. Was playing Borderlands 2. And so I had this sort of emotional connection to that game.
Sure.
But I was impressed with all the DLC and how well they supported that game. I never felt that it was a way where they took away from the overall story, though, because they realized what kind of game Borderlands is. So they weren't adding on to the Handsome Jack story necessarily. They were just adding things to the world, which I think is the right way to do a game like that. But when you have something like BioShock, another 2K game, which I also played the hell out of, changing the story in Episode 1 and Episode 2 the way that they did,
sure,
affected my overall opinion of the game, and I think that's a real danger that you have when you add story-based content to games after the fact.
Yep.
Agreed.
Hear, hear!
Yeah! Or there, there.
Number three. We know that Infamous Second Son standalone DLC, First Light, is coming in August, but it appears that its release date may be more exact than that, Greg. According to the PlayStation Store, the game is slated for August 26th. Since the date is a Tuesday, it indicates that this may be more than a placeholder. We've reached out to Sony for comment and haven't yet heard back. Very excited about that. Like Infamous 2's DLC, you can play this without ever playing or own the actual game itself.
Standalone stuff.
Yep.
If you watch Up at Noon this upcoming Monday, Nate Fox is on to talk about Infamous First Light. But first, Nemo writes in and says, Beyond. Hey guys, Nemo here. I was the guy that sent Colin the screenshot of First Light and LBP3 on the PS Store. I'm TigerNoodle12 on Twitter. I'm glad you wrote the story about First Light, but do we have any word on LBP3 being released at the end of March? P.S. to whoever is in the ever-rotating third chair, welcome. We all probably love you, and I hope you brought a Grundle Guard.
Thank you. I have a natural Grundle Guard. most of the guys in the room do. I actually pre-ordered. I pre-ordered the Infamous add-on.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. That was the first thing I pre-ordered.
That's the first one that's like the one you can buy and preload. Right?
Yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I did it immediately. And thank you. I'll see you again in 5 years.
this user sent me a screenshot of that store, you know, the store listing for First Light, and I went on and I was like, yeah, that is indeed true. And then he also did include LBP3, which is listed as March 31st, 2015. Now, that was weird because this is supposed to be a 2014 game. Now, that date indicates to us that that's a placeholder. Even though March 31st, 2015 is a Tuesday,
yeah.
I still think that that is a coincidence. It's a Q1, Q2 marker or whatever. But it's still weird that it's not marked as 2014 because it is supposed to be a game
really
that
weird,
comes out this year.
So
I asked Sony about it. They haven't responded.
As the guy who used to update, so here's a little fact.
Here comes some fun facts.
You may remember, I used to update all the release dates on IGN.com when I was here. Every single one. I'm sure you guys remember my long Excel sheets.
Yeah, it's very meticulous.
We're very stupid. But one thing that a lot of the retailers do is when they're given dates by game companies and when something's coming out, they usually say it's going to be out by our fiscal, the end of our fiscal quarter. Sony's fiscal quarter ends March 31st every year. Mm-hmm. That's why you're seeing it there. Their fiscal, the end of their fiscal year is going to be March 31st, 2015, which for them means that it's going to be out within the fiscal year. And they do that as a way to give the retailers a heads up as to when the game is expected, but it's in by no means a final date. That's probably why it's March 31st. Right. And I would, historically, if you look at when Little Big Planet games are released, you probably expect to see it in November, I would I would guess. Not official, obviously. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
They made a point. It seems like they're really far along with it.
No, yeah, Sumo's been rumored to have been working on that game for a long time. So, yeah, I think it'll be ready, too. I don't think there's anything to worry about. I'm still waiting to hear back from Sony on it just to see if they have a comment on it. But that's why I didn't write about that, because I think that the last or the First Light story is real. And I think that the, in my opinion, and I think that the Little Big Planet 3 thing, as Jeremy eloquently put, is probably a placeholder.
Mm-hmm.
Number four, Amazon France, the home of gaming leaks, has leaked something new, a fresh PlayStation 4 bundle. This one revolves around The Last of Us Remastered, which is due out in late July. There's new art for the bundle, and Amazon France is well known for its leaks, meaning that this is probably real. However, we haven't heard back from Sony for confirmation. Additionally, Sony has decided to charge $50 for The Last of Us Remastered instead of $60. So if you pre-ordered the game on PSN, you should get your $10 back automatically. Just FYI, because some people were worried about that, and I understand why, because that's a free, you know, it's another game you can buy for $10.
Jason.
Such as Escape Plan on PS4.
Jason.
Jason.
Jason. Jason writes into podcast. Beyond says Beyond.
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 Hey, Greg, Colin, and the ever rotating third chair. With The Last of Us PS4 weeks away and GTA 5 PS4 looming this fall, I was wondering if you'd heard anything about a PS3 to PS4 upgrade program similar to what companies did with Assassin's Creed 4, Ghosts, and others this past winter.
Well, you need the pen.
Yeah.
So we're talking about The Last of Us specifically, like the GTA style, or he was saying with the saves or with the actual.
Jason is asking, is there going to be an upgrade program similar to AC4, where if you bought AC4 on PS3, you could then just pay $10 extra and download the PS4 version?
No, there's no word on that. I don't think they're going to do that either. I mean, this is Naughty Dog itself is working on this, so that's a very valuable team with valuable time, and I'm sure they're not going to, you know, just let, you know, it's not like they outsource it because they care, and they're doing this, I think, in a way to kind of learn the PS4 a little bit better and refine their engine for, you know, a thief's end.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't expect that, but they did drop the price, and I think that
those
that's pretty cool.
Rare exceptions, right? I feel, because they were. This game obviously comes to PS3 a month before it comes to the PS4. They want to make sure they're still selling PS3 versions, so it was your way to get you through the door. Tomb Raider didn't do it, you know, it was because it was the definitive edition. Last of Us is Last of Us Remastered. There's all this different content in it. Who knows if GTA will have some kind of complete subtitle to it. But it's not the same thing, even though it kind of is, but it's really not to them because they've already made their money on those other games, so now it's all free moolah form now.
Yeah, I mean, I think with Remastered, I think there's going to be a lot of double dipping for sure, but I also think that a lot of people haven't played The Last of Us.
I'm one of them. I have not played it yet.
Oh, wow.
What?
It's been sitting unopened on my shelf since the day it came. I bought it. I pre-ordered the game, bought it when it came out, and it's been sitting there.
Wow.
That's incredible. You should play it.
I want to, but now I'm waiting for the Remastered version.
Yeah, that's the
Now I pre-ordered the PS4 Remastered version. I'll wait to play that.
And I'll wait for the PS5 version before I finally play it.
Number five, Batman Arkham Knight is getting PlayStation 4 exclusive content, and PlayStation.com has outlined exactly what that is. The exclusive missions come under the moniker Scarecrow Nightmare Pack and will involve the use of the Batmobile. Little else is currently known in terms of actual specifics, including whether this exclusive is timed or permanent. As for the release date, Microsoft has listed Arkham Knight for launch on February 24th on its website. February 24th is a Tuesday, indicating that this might be more than a placeholder. Again, we have not heard back officially, but that would make some sense. That's kind of similar to what happened with the Order 1886. They're pushing it from, you would have presumed, October, November release date to February. Just get a little bit more time, a little more crunch. So I'm looking forward to that one.
That was one of my favorite demos of the press conference, by the way, was The Order.
I'm very really good.
Looking forward to that game.
I'm more of a believer in The Order now than I was when I first saw it.
Yeah. And I like the fact that they focused on the werewolf type factor instead of the... I was, you know, at first you expect it to be a zombie the way they're chewing on the body. And I don't know. There's just something about that game. I love horror games. I love the atmosphere that they've got going on and the... I love the art style. I'm really intrigued by it, and I can't wait for that game. That's one of the few games I'm going to play on day one. When I'm going to actually open it when I pre-order it.
Sure you are. I'll believe it when I see it. Jake writes in and says, Beyond.
Beyond.
Dear Greg, Mr. Colin Moriarty, in the ever-present individual present on the ever-rotating third chair. I recently read that according to a leaked release date by Microsoft, Batman Arkham Knight is set to share... I don't know why it says share. Set to share February 24th, 25th release date with The Witcher 3. So he's saying Batman's going up against The Witcher 3. In my opinion, this would be a big mistake because it would split the sales of the less hardcore gamers out there. No, I would probably get one for each console just because I can. Could this happen? And will the hype behind these games hurt both titans?
No. I think if anything, it hurts The Witcher, not Batman.
120%. Yeah, Batman does not fear The Witcher. Batman's going to destroy The Witcher. No offense to The Witcher.
Yeah, I'm excited about The Witcher 3, but I think those two games are for two different groups of people. I think they're both open world, meaty games, especially Witcher. I think you can go back to The Witcher 6 months from then and play it if you really don't have time or the money or the means.
Yeah. Witcher's a super hardcore game, and Batman appeals to everybody.
I don't think those two companies are worried about each other.
Yeah.
Because they're not. It's not like Batman is coming out with Assassin's Creed or like something like that's kind of similar in a similar vein, a little more mainstream. And it's not like The Witcher 3 is coming out next to Dragon Age. You know, that would be a little different.
Yeah.
I would have a slightly different opinion. I think that you're right, half right, and that they're not worried, but only Warner Brothers would not be worried. If they are coming out the same day, I think that The Witcher people would definitely be a little concerned because even though it's different audiences, they would be overshadowed. They would be completely overshadowed just from the marketing and so if I were them and I was in their shoes, I would shoot for a date that's not Batman's date.
Sure.
Even though the audiences are different, I agree with that 100%. Mm. But between you mentioned Dragon Age, Inquisition and The Witcher, I was a lot more impressed by The Witcher. I thought the game looks fantastic, and if I had to pick between those two right now, I'd pick The Witcher.
Me too. I just think that it's Witcher. I think Dragon Age is more. I don't know, cachet with the name, right? Mm-hmm. I think The Witcher 3 is a game right now that we are all excited about because we see those demos. But I think if you asked just people in general, maybe even people like Skyrim but don't really follow IGN or video games, wouldn't know what The Witcher and why we're so excited about that. Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. Witcher 3 has a hardcore following that's also going to buy Batman. Batman has a mainstream follower that won't buy The Witcher.
Exactly. And the power of brand names is amazing, right? It's why most of the games that you see every year are sequels and not original games. It's because they know the power of the brand.
Yeah,
if you're an original IP that's a hardcore game launching against a really established franchise like Batman, you would be shaking in your boots if you're coming out the same day because you are going to get overshadowed. And remember, running editorial teams. Also, what's going to get review priority? Batman. Mm-hmm. What's going to get placement priority? Batman. Because that's what your audience wants to read about, too. Right. So if I were them, I'd move the date forward or backwards somewhere.
Do it tomorrow. Release it tomorrow.
Release it right now. Like the Saturn. Number 6. Machine Games, the developer behind Wolfenstein The New Order, has revealed that it's interested in doing a sequel for its well-received single-player shooter, which I'm super excited about. In a discussion with Giant Bomb, the game's creative director admitted that he and his team know what they want to do next if they're allowed to continue with Wolfenstein, and that they know what they want to fix from the previous game, as well as what they'd want to continue with as far as what they got right. I think that game, in terms of storytelling, was awesome.
Yeah.
I think the beginning of that game sucked. And I'm sure that they know that.
Because that's like the one critique everyone has of that game.
Everyone asks, like, what? Like, I gave it a 7.8, I think. I would have actually given it a higher score, like an 8, if the intro just wasn't so bad. Like, because I can really see people playing that intro and being like, Jesus Christ, and just like never playing any more of it.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it doesn't even put a gun in your hands for like 20 minutes, 30 minutes. It's like, holy, you're in a plane, you're all stymied. It's like teaching you how to use your knife and all. And it's like, oh, God.
But then you get the throw knives.
But then it's so good. You know what I mean? And that was the real shame. I'm like, who? In testing and mock reviews and stuff, like, who said that this was, like, they should have, like, just, frankly, scrapped that entire intro sequence completely.
Yeah.
And just started the game from the, I don't want to ruin it, but...
When the crap gets real.
Yeah. Like, well, you could with, like, without losing anything
from the story. 100%, yeah.
Did you play The New Order?
New Order, no. I've...
Has he even played The Last of Us?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, play The Last of Us first.
But I can speak to that, what you're talking about, though, the idea that they're giving you a long tutorial in the beginning before you really get to it. I hate it. I hate that idea in general. I think that it's an attempt to try to get larger audiences to play your game, to understand your game, to teach them. But it's a trend that I think needs to die really fast because all the focus groups that I've ever looked at since I left IGN, and even when I was at IGN, all the games that I ever played, I always felt forced tutorials a pain in the ass. I felt that they weren't helpful in any way, that it was just keeping me from getting to the action. I've always been a fan of tutorials that you can play if you want to, that they're also there. Really good game design is a lot more effective when you're teaching the player how to play without them even realizing that you're teaching them how to play. The old school Mega Man games,
Mega Man's
really
the best
good.
Of that, actually. Yeah.
Your favorite games ever? Three was your favorite one?
Yeah.
See, I remember the
Steel Trap. This one.
That's right, Justin. Thank you. But they taught you how to play the game without telling you. We're teaching you how to play, and games have gotten away from that, especially the larger publisher games, which you know that's an Activision game, and a lot of the EA games do that, and Sony and Microsoft games. They get this idea that they need to teach the users every little thing, and in reality, I think. Turns off a lot of people more than it actually helps them. We had metrics in offensive combat, for example. The free-to-play game that I was playing on, it's nowhere near as big as the games that we were talking about right now. But we did have numbers where we could track user behavior and see what they did. And we lost most people during the tutorial from the time that they installed the game than before we had a tutorial for them to play. And for me, that was very telling and just reaffirmed what I had already thought, and that's that you don't need tutorials in games. If you are going to have them, they should be a supplemental feature, something that's optional.
Sure.
You build them in as part of the game, something that's very specific. I think it's going to hurt your game. I don't care how big you are, how small you are. I think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree. I'm always fine with just this simple... You get to have a gun in your hand, it just quickly says, hold R and L, like, just in the corner, and that's it. Like, that's all you need. Like, you know how to play. Mm-hmm. Most people are intuitively know how to play a game. Like, we've talked about this before. Like, you know how to play games or you don't. And, like, you know how to use analog sticks or you don't. You know how to use triggers or you don't. And, like, typically, if you were to play Wolfenstein, you probably understand how the shooter works. And, like Jeremy's saying, you just have a little thing in the menu. It just brings you to, like, a white room where you can, like, just shoot shit if you want to and work on your moves. But otherwise,
I have two children, and the way that I teach them and that most kids are taught in general is that if you want them to understand something, if you're trying to teach them the language that you speak, you just speak to them. You don't say, I'm now going to show you this phone. Phone. To say phone, say phone. What you do is you just say, hand me the telephone. You talk to them conversationally so that they understand. They're immersed in the idea of what you're teaching them. That's the way people learn. When you're telling people what they can do and can't do in the frame of a video game, you're basically cutting off their creativity. You're keeping them from understanding, from testing their limits and seeing what they can do and can't do, which I think is part of the magical elements that got us into games in the first place before they were a huge market. It was... What can I do? What can I not do? And games like Fallout and Elder Scrolls and Grand Theft Auto, they really push those ideas. Go see what you can do. This is your playground. And I think that teaches players to be a lot more creative, and they learn a lot more about the game in that way, in a more fun way than through tutorials.
Sure, beating them over the head with it.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and the worst is like what was so frustrating about Wolfenstein specifically was that it was like not – it wouldn't be like, you know – you know, press R to use your knife just here. It'd be like, oh, we're losing altitude. Go to the back of the cockpit and cut out all of the packages back there. So they go out the back and, like, we lose weight or whatever. And then it's like, you're just swinging your knife at everything. And it's like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, pull this. This guy wants to talk to you. Pull this rod. Press X. It's like, all right, guys. Like, I'll figure it out. So, yeah, that was, I hope that they learn more about that. But that was Machine Games' first game. I think a lot of those guys come from Starbreeze, if I remember correctly. So they already have shooter experience. But I really want them to get another shot. I think they're going
to
get another shot.
I totally think they will.
Wolfenstein sold really well. I think that was the confusing thing about the game was that a lot of people... I didn't play until I had review builds. A lot of people were coming back because I think they were playing from the very beginning of the game being like, this game is not going to be very good. You know? And like they were wrong. I love experiences like that where... And I think it surprised a lot of people. It surprised the readers. It surprised the editors. So, you know, I'm stoked about that. Yeah, so good for you, Machine Games. Keep going. Number seven.
Pat on the back.
Woo! Number seven. In sad news, Subset Games revealed that its smash hit PC game FTL Faster Than Light will not be coming to Vita. The game, which recently was ported to iPad, simply won't work on Vita, according to Justin Ma, co-creator of the game. Quote, we looked into it extensively, and in the end, it just turns out the screen is too small for us. Sorry about that, they tweeted. I was really hopeful that game would come to Vita. I think it would be perfect for Vita, but they would have to redo everything. I don't think it's probably worth it for them, because it'll sell 50,000 copies.
I think FTL's cool. I also find it very ironic that it's called Faster Than Light and it has all the turn-based elements to it.
Yeah, that game was, and there was only a couple guys that made it, right? It was only like two or three guys that even worked on that game at all.
I think so. They came by for Judgment Day that year.
That's right. Yeah, they were nominated for Game of the Year. And finally, number eight, just some release dates. Metro Redux finally has a release date. The re-release of Metro 2033 and Metro Last Light, which can be purchased together or individually, will both be available on August 26th in North America and August 29th in Europe. And by the way, that studio is located, 4A is located in Kiev, Ukraine. And there's something going on over there right now. So. I'm, sorry.
It's fine.
So I'm really proud. I'm really proud of them, and impressed that they got the game out at all. So now, you know, I hope they're all staying safe. Although, you know, Kiev's not in the super danger zone. And Guacamelee
super danger zone.
And Guacamelee super.
I think that's the super danger zone.
I think that's the military term, super danger zone. And Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition will come to PS4 as well as Xbox One, Xbox 360, and Wii U on July 2nd. You can play the original version right now on PS3 and Vita. It's one of Vita's best games, specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it for news.
Good. That was a good show. Oh, wait, we're not going to the first segment. Good Lord.
Sorry.
I want to play Minecraft Vita, but it's not out.
We played it at E3 a little bit.
I know, I did. I can't wait. That was all I needed. So, Colin, where would I go right now to find out what games came out to the things with the stuff?
You go to the Andrew Memorial... Or Andrew Goldfarb Memorial list of upcoming PlayStation software on all three platforms by the IGN editors.
Why is it the memorial? Oh, because he's not... but he's not dead.
Well, he's
dead. He's not dead dead.
No.
He's just, I saw him tweet just the other day.
From beyond the grave.
I like to think about it, though. Like, in a year and a half, we'll still be doing that, and people will think he's dead. Like, new listeners will be like, oh, man. It's cool that they honor their friend, but then they do the dun, dun. One person wrote in saying they didn't like it. It wasn't happy enough for them. But they missed the point that he broke our heart, so he doesn't get a happy song.
I understand that completely.
If we still cursed, I would say something about him.
Yeah.
You
could still say mean things about him. He's coming by in July.
No, I know. I saw that. There's a lot of games this week.
Yeah?
PlayStation 3, Atelier of Rona, plus The Alchemist of Arlen is out. That's retail and digital. Grid Autosport is available digitally. Transformers Rise of the Dark Spark is available retail and digitally. Valiant Hearts The Great War is available digitally.
Oh my god, I can't wait to play it.
And X-Blaze Code Embryo is available digitally in retail. And that game looks pretty cool as well. On PS4, Blue Estate, which looks like a questionable on-rail shooter, is available digitally. RBI Baseball 14, which is a questionable digital game, is available digitally. Transformers Rise of the Darkspark is available retail and digitally. And Valiant Hearts is available digitally.
I'm going to download it as soon as it's up.
On Vita, Atelier of Rona Plus, The Alchemist of Arlen, is available digitally only. So if you want the retail version, you have to get it on PS3. BlazBlue Chrono Phantasma is available at retail and digitally. That's already available on PS3. It came out last month. End of Serenity is available digitally. This is a PSP game.
Oh, this is the up-res
pretending
one?
Is a Vita game, but it's not a Vita game. It's a PSP game, so no trophies.
Don't fall for it.
Farming Simulator 14 is available digitally. X-Blaze Code Embryo is available digitally in retail. And Z-Run, the long-in-development Vita game that I've been writing about for like 18 months or something, is available digitally finally. And on PS2.
What?
PS2 Classic. Shin Megami Tensei, yes. Devil Summoner 2, Raidu Kuzunoha versus King Abaddon is available for $10.
Good Lord.
That's it.
I games. Recommend that game.
They've been releasing all the Shin Megami Tensei like spinoffs.
Those
the
are
last
great.
Month or so.
I'm a big fan of Nocturne. If you guys ever play, have never played Shin Megami Tensei 3 Nocturne, play that game.
That
fantastic.
That already came. That came out a few weeks ago, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I should. I've not messed with any PS2 classics.
Mm.
I don't know why. I have a bunch of PS1
because you've already played.
There's like a million games to play.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
There's so much stuff now to play.
But there was PS1 classics where old I like downloaded like you know like Final Fantasy games.
What was ever the story when Jared Petty came in? And he sold me on Suikoden 2.
That's not out yet.
Yeah, what the hell? Where's
it's
that?
Coming. It's ESRB.
Better get it.
ESRB rated it.
Oh, Suikoden. I love that series.
Yeah.
Suikoden is awesome. Suikoden 2 is the best one far.
Yeah, one of our newest associate editors on Wikis, Jared Petty, gave an impassioned speech about Suikoden 2. I agree. I mean, those games hold a special place in a lot of PS1 gamer, RPG gamers, specifically hearts, because that is an amazing generation of JRPGs, as you and I share that passion, a lot of people really love those games. So the ESRB rated it. Konami wouldn't have spent the money if they're not gonna to get it rated.
I'm
sure it's just not the time isn't right. The time isn't right.
You don't spend money to get it rated.
I thought it cost like $5,000 to get your game rated.
I got our game rated the other day. It was free.
You're people who know people, though.
I think that might be true because I think I've heard that like the whole that process is
here's
is,
where you
is,
get
is monetary
where you pay there's if you don't follow the rules is where you can start throwing out the bucks.
Oh, is it your first one's free and then you start?
Yeah, it's like drugs.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay.
Your first rating's free.
No. It's that there are certain guidelines you have to follow. Especially if you're doing things like media releases and whatnot, and if you're not following the rules,
okay.
they'll ding you.
And then there are some financial things down the line, but it's not the idea that here's X amount of dollars and here's our rating.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, I can give one of the things. I know I keep interrupting your show, but one of the things
it's a conversational podcast. You're allowed to do this.
One of the things I've realized
we didn't bring you on here to be quiet.
One of the interesting things that getting in the development side of games since I left is really interesting because a lot of the things I thought I knew about how the game development process happened when I was on the media side
sure.
turned out to be highly incorrect. And I was in charge of things. and on the game development side, I've noticed a lot of the things that the game development industry in general thinks about the media is also highly incorrect. It's very interesting in just how much each side is unaware of what wow. the other one does in so many ways. Like one of the things that comes up most often that bugs me so much, but it happens all the time, is whenever I meet someone in the development side now and they ask me what I used to do and I tell them I used to be in the games press, there I was like, well, how much did so-and-so pay you guys to review this game? And it is a very common misconception. Let me point that out. Misconception that the games press is corrupt and amongst developers. I mean, a lot of them just in general believe that that's the way that it works. And even though I'm not in the games media anymore, I always get offended by that because I can't recall ever working with anyone ever that had even anything close to something that would be close to corruption. I mean, it's in fact, we bend over backwards to make sure that we're as honest and true to what the job entails as possible. And for a lot of folks, though, it's an uphill battle in convincing them that that's the way it is. And so I find that really interesting. And in the games press site, a lot of the things about things like release dates and how long it takes to develop a game and why certain features make it in and why they don't, a lot of the ideas that I used to have as to why that happened, I was completely wrong. Completely wrong. And usually, I mean, it really comes a lot of features in games, for instance, when they make it in or when they don't make it in, it's 100% it's time. I'd say 99.9%. Every game doc that I've ever either worked on or consulted on or looked over, always bigger than the actual game you get. Every single time. And they have some really crazy stuff. And the most annoying thing for you as a developer is when you're reading reviews or comments from fans and they're saying, if only it had this and this and this. And you're like, that was in the game. That was in the game. We had it working. But we couldn't make the time frame. And as a result, it didn't make it in. And then you get dinged. And it's a really interesting thing. I think that one day someone who's far more talented and has a lot more time than I do could do, I think, a really in-depth piece in perceptions versus reality in the video game market. I think it'd be really interesting for people to learn more about the media and the game development side and how a lot of these decisions are made and why they're made. And I think it would be really helpful to open up some eyes.
Yeah,
that's my public service announcement for the.
No,
sounds good. I'll just say real quick. I mean, I agree with you that I get frustrated with the charge, like where there's some people just think there's corruption and stuff like that. And I can't speak for every other outlet. I mean, I've only worked at IGN. I've worked at for IGN as a freelancer since I was 18 and an editor since I was 22. But I agree. Like, there's nothing like that ever happened. Like, no one's ever approached me and been like, well,
how about this bag of money, kid?
You want this bag of coins? And it's like, that's never happened. Like, I've never had anything untoward like that ever even remote. Like you said, even remotely happen. And it's just frustrating to make people, understand that. Because I think that what they don't understand is that the publishers know what their games are going to get typically because they have mock reviews. And so they have a general idea, and they're not always right. But, like, they know – publishers aren't stupid. They don't put all their games out and think they're going to get tens. And then, they're very studious and very educated, and they know their game, and they – that's why a lot of people are curious, like, when we don't get a game until it comes out. Well, yeah, typically that's a bad sign.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of stuff really frustrates me as well, especially because this is the example I always use. Like, people always like, the moon landing never happened, right? And I'm like, yes, it did. Yes, it did. And they're like, well, there's all this evidence. And I'm like, well, the evidence is that some of that's controversial, sure, but here's the thing you're ignoring, that this conspiracy involves thousands of people that have never said anything to anyone ever. Yep. Like their families, their friends, it's never, you know, and that's the same thing I feel like now. I'm like, so every PR person, every marketing person, every games journalist, everyone's in on it. And like, you'll just, you know, and I'm like, come on, that's so silly. Like if that kind of stuff happened, just like in sports, when the NBA refs were, you know, colluding with each other to like fix games, or in soccer, you see that kind of stuff. Like that kind of stuff breaks, and
somebody tell someone.
It's incredibly hard to keep a secret in today's day and age, which tells you that it's not a secret, that it doesn't happen.
That's exactly right.
The two incidents that I remember in the entire history of working at IGN where I had to change something weren't corruption based at all. It was editor mistake. So I had to – we pulled a review and re-reviewed it, a sports game. It was it was a simulation sports game, and we reviewed it – the person that reviewed it originally compared it to a traditional sports game as opposed to a text-based simulation game than it was. And it was published early, and it was completely wrong in terms of the approach. And so we as a team – I didn't think that it should have been published, so I pulled it and we reviewed it. That was one instance. It was an editor approaching the game, I believed, in an improper way. And the only other one that I ever pulled was for Stuntman. You guys remember that one?
I remember Stuntman.
Stuntman Ignition. And the original review, person who reviewed it had some kind of pre-existing issue against Stuntman that we weren't aware of and was unhappy to review it to begin with. Mm. And so when they reviewed it, we pulled that because they went in with the idea that they weren't going to like the game before they reviewed it, which you shouldn't do.
A big no-no.
And so we reviewed that again, and that freelancer we didn't use again. So, you know, it was lesson learned. Those are the two worst examples in the entire 10 years that I was at IGN where I can remember anything even just being out of the ordinary. And neither one of those, I think, are terrible instances.
They're honest, actually.
They were two people making mistakes and us trying to correct them.
Yeah.
And they had nothing to do with publishers or anything else. And I think that, as a whole, other places like GameSpot and GamesRadar are exactly the same.
Yeah.
They do what they need to do on a professional level with very, very, very few influences or problems. So I just want to reassure. The readers and listeners and everyone else out there that what you see is what you get from all these publications. They're legit, and which is the best thing you can hope for in a press.
Yeah, I agree, and I always get frustrated. Specifically, it's just like you can't force someone to see your integrity, right? You just hope that they understand that you're telling them the truth. And one of the things always frustrating to me is like, well, game X gets a good review and game X has ads all over the site. And it's like, well, first of all, we don't know when ads go up.
Sure.
Like, sales at IGN and I'm sure these other publications are totally separate. We're on separate sides of the building, literally.
Yep.
Like they do their thing and we do our thing, and there's no crosstalk between,
right.
You know,
you don't know,
like,
what's happening.
Like, yeah, they're not, you know.
And that always annoys me because they're just looking at that one instance. So many bad games by the entire site, and then like Naughty Bear was everywhere when I destroyed that.
Yeah,
thing.
Exactly.
And they
ignore those specific instances. So yeah, we know that most people understand like the financial realities. Like we have a salary, we don't get anything from anyone. Like we don't get traffic bonuses, we don't get, you know, like anything. It is what it is, and you get what you get. So it's always, I always like talking about those things because I like to reassure people too, because you know there's some skepticism out there about a lot of that kind of stuff, and maybe I'm just not skeptical because I really understand how it works.
Yeah,
you've been here so long.
It's also hard to not take personally because it's your reputation and your integrity being brought into question.
Yep. Right.
So yeah, I totally understand. One other, can I complain about something now?
No, of course.
Please do.
Specifically about IGN.
Sure.
Okay. Complain.
You don't work here.
I know.
I can't stop you.
So one thing I'm curious, because I never saw, you guys a while back changed your review scales.
Right.
Which I'm totally fine within your rights, but one thing that I've noticed is a lot of the older games that we reviewed, me included and you guys, that had old scores, let's say a 7.0 or 6.5, which meant something different back then, mm-hmm. have been left the same, but their description has been converted to the new meaning. Meaning the context of the review, the score, no longer matches what it was at the time. So I'm curious if what the thinking was behind that. Curveball. What the thinking was behind that, because a lot of the games where I reviewed, for an example, where I gave it a low 7, which when I reviewed it, a low 7 meant it was a decent game. Now under your current scale, it means it's a good game.
There's the giant umbrella of good, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the same. So a game that it should have, under your current scale, the game that we gave a 7.0 at my time would now be in the 6s for you guys. Why the application to the older games that were reviewed under a different criteria keep the score when they have a new description?
I don't even know if I know the answer to that question.
I mean, you figure you're talking about, we went through a couple different changes, right? Like, yeah, when Casey came in, or no, I'm sorry, when Hill was running it, we went to the 20-point scale.
Yeah.
So it was just, you know, point ohs or point fives.
Yeah.
And then when Casey came back in, he thought that eliminated a lot of the ability to compare on a granular basis and say this is better than this. And so we went back to the points. And when we did that, that's when I think we readjusted how everything fell. And so, honestly, I mean, again, yeah, I'm sure there's blogs up about it, you know what I mean, and articles about the changes and everything else. But, I mean, from my stance, right, it would just be the fact that I think IGN is a very much in-the-moment site. What did Valiant Hearts get? It comes out today. More than what did Stuntman Ignition get back? You know what I mean? It's one of those things that get wrapped up in top 25 lists or editor, you know, my favorite game of all time, and or you know, the top 100 list for platforms. And I think those in the long run speak more than the reviews, I think.
Right.
And that'd be the only thing. And because I guess the bigger thing would be, I mean, I'm sure I don't even want to start throwing away nib and everything else when we're talking about CMSs and right. But I mean, like, it's all how the process to go back and try to backdate things and make them not switch with everything else switch, I'm sure would break the site because there's so many thousands of reviews.
The easy way to do it would just be do not apply review rating to any article before X date.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I that's way above my pay grade. I don't even, you know.
But then I think because by doing that, though, then we would confuse the five people who go to check Stuntman Ignition, right? And be like, well, wait a second. This is a 7. It
says
decent.
Why do we keep talking about Stuntman Ignition?
You gave me one game and I grasped onto it. Jeremy Dunham.
Yeah.
You're the star of the show.
Ugh.
I have one question from long time Podcast Beyond listener, Charlie Gadsden. He brings up an old segment and he says, welcome back. Welcome back to Beyond, Jeremy.
Beyond.
Can we please have one Nostradamus prediction for PlayStation in 2014?
Wow.
This is a long-standing Jeremy Dunham tradition. When you come on, prognosticate about what he saw coming to the PlayStation future in 2014. What do you see?
Wow, that's a really broad question. You know,
Please say Patapon.
I will point this out, original Nostradamus prediction back in 2007 was that eventually the PlayStation 3 would outsell the Xbox 360. Nobody believed me. And it took 5 years. but it happened.
Yeah.
And so I just want to point that out. You know, I don't have anything, unfortunately, because of the way that I work now, that I'm on individual games rather than seeing the industry as a whole, I don't have the same sort of reach that I used to in terms of my predictions and the sort of influence.
I gotta imagine making a game, marketing a game, doing all the stuff, a new company you're coming onto, it's gotta be hard to, at any moment, peek your head up and see what's happening in the rest of the industry while then focusing on getting your game going.
But I have to do that, because if I'm going to market our game effectively and understand who we're marketing it to, I need to know what's going on. So there's a bit of a balance there. And so my prediction is not going to be anything revolutionary or groundbreaking, but it's that the PlayStation 4 will continue, I think, its dominance in terms of the current gen systems. And that's a little pet peeve of mine. It's not next gen. It's happening now.
Yeah,
gen. The old systems are last gen. That it will continue its dominance. I don't think that it will ever be usurped by the Xbox One. I think that it will maintain its lead for the entirety of its life cycle for a number of reasons. I think it has the stronger first-party titles in general. I think it's more inclined to satisfy gamers who are into playing game systems for the games and not trying to be an all-in-one device.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that in general, it understands the mistakes that it made with the PlayStation 3 marketing and the features that it lacked, and are on top of trying to be the first to implement new features into their platform. So my prediction, it's a safe one,
yeah.
but it's that PS4 will continue and win, if that's what we want to call it, the hardware wars in this generation.
All right. Well, there you go, Charlie Gadsden. Thank you so much for your question. Yep. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for watching and or listening to Podcast Beyond episode 348. It's been our pleasure to serve you. It's a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
348 weeks of the
348.
Show. 48. Good Lord. Jeremy Dunham, thank you so much for joining
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me, guys. You. It was really good to see you again. I'm glad to be here.
Everyone, and go tweet at you. Go yeah. tweet it.
So I'm at Dunham Smash.
Yeah.
The Psyonix Studios is our Twitter for our game company, and then we also have specific Twitters for Nosgoth, which is a fun game. If anyone wants to play it, you can sneak that in there too. I'll see if I can get you in. And then also for Rocket League on Facebook.
Great. Ladies and gentlemen, remember, IGN.com keeps the mics on, so go there. Read the articles, watch the videos, join Prime, download the IGN PlayStation 4 app where you can watch Podcast Beyond every week. Now without offending your children. Keep up on Twitter, IGN's IGN. Dunham is Dunham Smash. I'm Game Over Greggy. Colin is No Taxation. Every Podcast Beyond ends in a song, in a segment we call Ryan's Wrap-Up. Today comes from Trevor. Trevor says, hey, Colin and Greg. Diss, Jeremy. Nothing there.
How could you have known?
I have to start off with a Beyond.
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 Love the podcast, one of the few I make time to listen to weekly. My friends are in a local band here in Wintersville, Ohio, called We Must Save the Princess, and I've been trying to help them get their stuff out there. They try to do a lot of positive pop punk. This song is called Belong, not Beyond, but it sounds like it. Belong. And it is about finding your place where you belong. It's got a great message and a great listen. I think you guys make us feel like we belong each and every week, so thank you. Check out their Bandcamp page at wemustsavetheprincess.bandcamp.com. Trevor, we'll gladly play Belong. Here's the thing about this Belong song. I started calling, I started jamming. I'm like, yeah, it's like newfound glory, right? Mm-hmm. And then just out of nowhere, it's like, there's like death metal segments of them just screaming. And it's catchy, but I will not be buying the album. I was down to throw money at these people. I was like, whoa, okay. Good thing I listened the rest of the way. But here it is, everybody. Belong. Jeremy, thank you.
Thank you very much. I love you guys.
We love you. Thanks for coming back. Beyond.
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 lose all sense of reality and enter another world. Remember, do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics, and sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues, and it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.